of this war. They need money coming in to pay off all, you know, that's why there's open corruption in all of Halliburton Rock, because if there wasn't open corruption at all places, they wouldn't be able to siphon the money off.
Well, you know, a lot of that had to do with not-so-bright Dick picking up W.R. Grace and Company.
And suddenly he had to get a load of money for the corporation, and he's the vice president of America. Well, a war will do.
Yeah, I think I scrape up a little bit.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, look at who really profited out of, I don't know, the Second World War. Well, first of all, who got compensation in the Second World War? My granddad didn't. He died of bronchitis and pneumonia because of the Second World War, because he spent every night for like 6 years on a gun in freezing rain and wind outside of Perth defending the docks from German bombers. He didn't get any compensation. Do you know who did? Prescott.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones is down more than 340 points in trading today. We'll have the latest numbers from Wall Street just before today's close, coming up in our business block. President Bush held a press conference today before leaving for vacation. He dismissed the idea of raising the federal gasoline tax to bring in money to repair bridges after last week's disaster in Minnesota. The New York Times reports that investigators may have discovered a design flaw in the Minneapolis I-35 West Bridge that collapsed last week. It involves steel girders used to connect the steel parts of the structure. There was extra weight on the bridge from construction crews doing resurfacing work at the time of the collapse. Also today in Minneapolis, searchers found the bodies of the 6th and 7th victims of last week's collapse. 5 bodies were recovered earlier. There still may be 6 people missing. In Utah, rescue crews are drilling closer to the 6 coal miners who have been trapped since Monday. The rescuers are believed to be about 300 feet from their projected location and hope to reach them by tonight, according to a co-owner of the mine. In Afghanistan today, a summit with more than 600 Pakistani and Afghan tribal leaders began. The 4-day gathering will address security problems in the border areas where the Taliban and Al-Qaeda have regained strength. Pakistan's President General Pervez Musharraf decided today not to declare a state of emergency to deal with increasing violence and political instability in the country. He will also go ahead with plans to hold elections. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with Iranian leaders today in Tehran. Iran says the Iraqi violence would end if the U.S. withdraws its troops. In western Baghdad today, tens of thousands of Shiite pilgrims are gathering to honor an 8th-century imam. Compared to previous years, the violence so far has been minor. 2 people have died, and at least 15 pilgrims were crushed. In this morning's press conference, President Bush said that Iranians who smuggle bombs to Iraqi insurgents will, quote, face consequences if they keep doing that. This weekend, President Bush will meet with French President Nicolas Sarkozy at the Bush family compound in Maine. Afterwards, the president will go to his Texas ranch. And today is the first full day in space for the Shuttle Endeavour crew, including teacher astronaut Barbara Morgan. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Not that long ago, 3 bears were discussing how difficult it is to get a good night's sleep. What you sleep on is paramount to any sleep success. Papa Bear complained about how he was tired after tossing and turning all night. Mama Bear complained about sinking into each other like sleeping in a hammock.
You can't even turn the mattress over to use the other side.
Then Zizi the Panda told them about his perfect night's sleep on his Monterey mattress. It has much higher quality padding to prevent the hammock syndrome and has 2 great sides for twice the mattress life.
You know, panda bears are really smart. Hi, this is Brian Gingrich. At Monterey Mattress, our family has been building the finest latex, foam, and innerspring mattresses for over 20 years. We supply most of the leading resorts on the Monterey Peninsula. With such high standards of quality, customers purchase their mattresses here at factory prices and then ship to their homes across the nation. Discover the difference a Monterey Mattress can make in your life. Come see us at our factory showroom in Sand City or online at MontereyMattress.com.
A moderate earthquake measuring 4.5 struck the Los Angeles area early this morning. It was centered about 30 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles in Chatsworth. There were no reports of injuries or damage other than items falling from shelves in homes and businesses. The federal government has unveiled the 3rd and possibly least controversial version of its airline passenger pre-screening program. This one is expected to raise fewer privacy concerns over personal data. Foreign Tire Sales, a tire importer, has announced the recall of 255,000 tires made in China. They may pose a safety risk. An American vehicle is sharing the number one spot in reliability for the first time in 12 years. Buick is tied with Lexus, according to the latest J.D. Power and Associates ranking. The rest of the top five are Cadillac, Mercury, and Honda. In July, retailers report sales were weak across the board. Teen and specialty retailers were the hardest hit. Luxury retailers did better than analysts expected. Campbell Soup may sell its Godiva chocolate business so the company can focus on healthier food items. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $71.59 a barrel, and near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 380 points at 13,277, the NASDAQ down 56, the S&P 500 down 44. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Should government pay for children's health care? More specifically, should government pay for the health care of children who are too poor to afford it themselves, rich enough that they can't get it on Medicaid? We're talking about lower middle income children, if you will. Well, there's a bill in the Senate and a bill in the House, and both bills the president has promised to veto. What are the issues here? I want to explore exactly what's going on in these bills for the next hour, and to do so with two experts, two people who really know about these bills, Andrew Moylan, the Director of Government Affairs for the National Taxpayers Union, is, as you expect, an opponent of the S-CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, state, I should say, Children's Health Insurance Program. And then later on in the hour, I'm going to have Nayara Hawk. She's a spokesperson for the Children's Defense Fund that's going to defend the program. And at the end of this hour, you too will be an expert in exactly what this provides, and you can decide for yourself what you think of the plan. Before I invite Andrew Moylan on the air, I just want to briefly go over the plans. And if he disagrees with me on what they do, he can certainly tell us. The State Children's Health Insurance Program began in 1997. It's a relatively recent health insurance program, the most dramatic, perhaps, expansion since Medicaid and Medicare. It is set to expire this year on September 30th. It's a 10-year expiration date, at which time 800,000 children will lose coverage. Both the House and the Senate have passed bills to extend the program. The Senate has passed a bill by 68-31. That means it's more than a veto-proof majority. That means all Democrats and independents and 17 Republicans signed on. It would cost $35 billion. It would insure 3.2 million children, and it would pay for it by raising the federal tax on cigarettes from 39 cents a pack to 84 cents a pack. It would go up by 45 cents. The House bill is more generous, if you will, or more expensive. It covers 4.2 million children. It passed by a vote of 225-204. It costs $50 billion. It would raise the cigarette tax to $1, and it would also reduce some of the federal subsidies to insurance companies under Medicare. Nonetheless, groups like the American Association of Retired Persons continue to support the bill. They argue that the payments to insurance companies actually increase the premiums for seniors. But I know my guest, Andrew Moylan, disagrees with it, and he supports President Bush's promise to veto the bill. Andrew Moylan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you.
Let me first ask you, why do you, is this a philosophical thing, or is it just too expensive?
It's a little of both, I would say.
Okay.
Obviously, philosophically, there's an issue with how much we expect government to provide us. I mean, I would make the argument that there are a lot of other things that are much more vital to one's existence than health insurance. You know, why?
For example,
why do we not expect the government to clothe us, for example, or feed us on a regular basis? I mean, those are things that are much more elemental, and we are not asking our government to cover those things. So that's sort of the philosophical angle, but there's also, you know, when you get down to the nitty-gritty of the provisions of the bill, we think that it's simply misguided. I mean, we're talking about a large tax increase on a politically unpopular group of people in cigarette smokers, and there are some very serious flaws in the way that this bill would cover children and, in many cases, adults and people who are not the lower middle income families that you suggested in the intro, we're talking about people who are middle to upper middle income. And so there are some very serious questions about it that I'm sure we'll get into here.
Yes, let me deal with it piece by piece. Let me start with one of the most interesting parts, the part that they're going to tax cigarette smokers. They're not doing a general increase in income tax or an increase in FICA, you know, Social Security, Medicare taxes. They're saying, look, cigarettes kill you if you smoke them. They can, with secondhand smoke, kill others. And while we wouldn't ban the product, even though it kills 400,000 Americans a year, we're going to make it a little bit more difficult to buy in the hopes that people quit, which will help people's health. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is it's completely disingenuous. The people are at the same time are arguing that it's going to raise revenue but also reduce the amount of smoking. It can't do both of those things at once. And
well, it can do both. I mean, right? Obviously, to the extent that it truly cuts down on smoking, it won't raise as much revenue, but certainly it can do a little of both, can't it?
Well, it may well reduce smoking, and people respond to incentives like that, but then it's disingenuous to say that it will fully fund a program like this expansion in S-CHIP. There have been estimates that the Congress would need 9 million people, new people, to begin smoking, just to fund the program over the next 5 years. And over the 10 years after that, 22.4 million new smokers, to fund the program as they've laid it out. And so there's a fundamental...
Where does that study come from,
there.
Andrew? I'm just curious.
I'm sorry?
Where's that study come from? Is that a Congressional Budget Office study, or is that like a National Taxpayers Union study?
That comes from a Heritage Foundation study on it recently.
Okay, it's a Heritage Foundation study. Because, you know, I know the CBO has to score these kinds of things. I assume that they've scored it in a way that they think is nonpartisan.
Well, the CBO has estimated additional costs as well, which is why another reason why it's a disingenuous attempt to increase healthcare coverage to people in the country, and it's something that would bust the so-called PAYGO budget rules that the Democrats have been touting since they took control in 2006.
Now, PAYGO, of course, means that you don't bring in a new program unless you pay for it. Does the National Taxpayers Union in general support PAYGO policies, or do you support policies that could bring us into more debt? I mean, just totally apart from the issue of it's going to children's health care, does your organization support pay-as-you-go policies, or you support deficit spending?
We, as a taxpayer group primarily, we are obviously very supportive of balanced budgets.
Okay.
With regard to the PAYGO rules in particular, we have concerns that they're often used to prevent any kind of tax cuts for Americans who fund the government. And there are some concerns with the specific rules that are in place now, but obviously, philosophically, we support a government that lives within its means the way that families do across the country.
I was just wondering whether the National Taxpayers Union, let's say you have a certain government that costs, I don't know, $1 trillion, I'll throw out a random figure, does the National Taxpayers Union support taxing people enough to pay for it, or do you support cutting taxes even when it leads to a deficit?
Well, we support funding government at the level that it needs to provide the basic services that we expect from it and nothing more. Believe me, I wish we had a $1 trillion government today. That
right.
would be a big improvement.
Let me go into the question of cigarette smokers, though, because obviously if the money's not enough, you can always raise the amount per pack of cigarettes. What do you think, just philosophically, of the idea that we take a group of people who are doing something that's harmful to their health and to the health of people around them, and to some extent costs our state and local governments money in emergency room coverage and coverage to take care of lung cancer and so forth. What do you think of the idea of penalizing people who choose to do a deadly drug?
Well, I think that the health concerns are something that are a little bit outside of our mission as a group. But when you look at the situation, the reason that you're not, you talked about it not being an income tax increase. The reason that it's not an income tax increase is because that would hit a heck of a lot more people and would draw a lot more ire from regular taxpayers. They chose to add on to the excise tax and cigarettes because it was a small group of people that are politically unpopular that were, frankly, easy picking. And so, that's why they chose to do it that way rather than face the public and be honest about the cost that this is going to entail, and levy an income tax increase or something else that would hit most people rather than the small portion that smokers represent.
Now, there's also in the House bill, though not in the Senate bill, and this will have to go to conference before we see what will go to the president, a provision to reduce federal subsidies to insurance companies for Medicare. Is there anything wrong with that?
Well, the payment rates with Medicare are obviously a very complicated thing, and so there have been a lot of different adjustments that have been suggested, and that's one of the reasons that this debate has kind of been turned on its head a little bit, because we're talking about expanding this program dramatically rather than talking about fixing the issues that have been brought up over the last 10 years of its existence. So I think if we were talking about extending the program rather than expanding it, that we would be able to have a more serious debate about those things.
So you don't necessarily have a problem per se with the reducing the federal subsidies to the insurance companies?
Not necessarily. It's not something that has been a main focus of ours in the bill, because, frankly, it's a relatively minor provision in it when you compare it to the tax increase and the massive expansion in coverage.
Let me ask you, and actually we're going to go to a break, but when I come back, I want to ask you about the comment where you say that this is funding not just lower middle-income people, but actually upper middle-income people on health care, and also invite our listeners to join in the discussion. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. And that's what they are. Kick them in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
Now that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. 11 a.m. to noon weekdays here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the state children's health insurance program and more broadly the philosophical question of whether the government should be providing health care to children. My guest, Andrew Moylan, Director of Government Affairs for the National Taxpayers Union, says we don't clothe children, we don't feed children. Why should we help care for poor children? And I know I've got some callers on the line. I've also got people who've been commenting on the blog. Keep those comments coming at radioinsidescoop.com, though we may not get to all of them. Andrew, I guess it's a philosophical thing for you, but what if you have children in America, it's not their fault that they're poor? Does this mean that a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old might die when we could otherwise take care of them?
Well, I mean, this is what always happens to people on my side of the spectrum, is we get accused of not caring about children in this country, or not caring about health insurance or what have you. What we're saying is that there is a proper role for the federal government to play, and that the bills that we're talking about, the state children's health insurance program, are not within that proper role.
Well, what is that proper role?
Well, I mean, we've talked a little bit about some of the basic necessities that we expect from a federal government. We're talking about a national defense, and we're talking about a justice system, and protecting our rights, and protecting our families, and that's what, you know, the federal government is there for. We have the laboratory of the state, so to speak, to experiment with some of these policies on a state level. And so, you know, if Wisconsin wanted to cover everybody, which they're trying to do, that's something that's within their right as a state government, but that this is not something that the federal government ought to be getting involved in.
But wouldn't the National Taxpayers Union oppose an increase in children's health care in individual states as well?
We would, because we don't think that it's something that government ought to be doing, but there's a very different argument when you get to a state that have different constitutions and different provisions that govern them being able to do it. And what we're saying is that the federal government, at least in our view, ought not to be providing health care to all citizens, or certain portions of citizens, or, you know, people that are more politically popular, like children and pregnant women. And I mean, that's essentially what the
children are more popular than smokers in America, basically, as it goes.
Well, I there's very little question about that, but
all right, let me go to Sue from Ohio. She's been waiting on the line. Sue, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Go ahead, Sue, you're on the air.
Okay. Hey, Andrew, I have a question for you. Here in Ohio, a few years ago, Governor Taft raised the state cigarette tax so that he could give estate tax breaks to wealthy inheritance. Is that something that you would support, him doing that?
Well, I assume you're referring to eliminating the estate tax, but you know, a lot of times we get these tax shifting proposals where somebody proposes that we raise one tax in order to lower another, and that's something that we're very wary of, because oftentimes the tax relief doesn't really come about in the way that people say it does, or it just manages to shift the burden around. And so what we're looking for is lowering the overall burden of taxation, and not necessarily just shifting it from one group to another.
So you take no position on whether cigarette taxes should be raised in order to lower estate taxes for people?
No, I mean, it depends on each situation. You know, I think that there are some tax shift proposals that have merit, and a lot of them don't. But most times, and I mean, it sounds like that's an example where people are raising a tax on an unpopular group and using it to fund other priorities. And Governor Taft's priority may have been to lower the estate tax, but, you know, a lot of other governors may have the priority of expanding health care, or, you know, funding transportation programs or what have you. And so there's a lot of variation to it, and so we're very wary of the tax shifting schemes in general.
It's just interesting when you say you're wary of the tax shifting schemes, your basic idea is to lower overall taxes. What would you think of a tax shifting scheme that, for example, lowered taxes on poor people and raised it on rich people? You'd be leery of that too.
Well, I mean, we think that taxes ought to be levied at one single rate for all taxpayers, whether it's a sales tax or an income tax or what have you. We think that people ought to all contribute the same share of their income to be able to fund the government. And so
where my big problem comes in with this is to give a tax break to a certain group of people so that they can keep money they never earned, and then chastise for raising the same tax to give kids that would otherwise not have health care.
Well,
did you catch that, Andrew?
I'd reject the notion that, you know, tax cuts are giveaways to anybody. Fundamentally, that rests on the principle that it's the government's money to begin with, and that they can hand it out as they see fit. And what we, you know, as a group believe is that that's that individual's money. It's that taxpayer's money to begin with.
The person didn't earn it. I mean, in the case of the estate tax, obviously those are descendants of the person who earned it.
Well, the estate tax is a very thorny issue, obviously, for a lot of people, but the bottom line is it's not up to the government to determine whether or not people deserve the money that they have. And that's what people are trying to do with the estate tax. They're saying, you don't deserve that money, and so we're going to take half of it, even though most of it has already been taxed either at income rates or capital gains rates or what have you. And so we don't think that the government ought to get into determining who deserves what money and who doesn't deserve it.
Okay, but Andrew, that's an argument really against all taxation in general. I mean, you can say no one should be taxed at any time because everyone, in fact, except the estate tax, which is one of the exceptions to the rule, that everyone else earned their money in some way or form. I guess capital gains, you earned it less. Anytime you tax someone, it's the government saying, in effect, we're going to take some from you and some from you. Why shouldn't, say, smokers as a class pay a higher tax, and children as a class pay a lower tax? Because you got to tax somebody, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we have constitutions that are set up that have taxing authority. There's a reason that we have a government. I mean, we're not talking about reducing the country to anarchy, but what we are talking about is having a fair system that taxes at a low rate on a broad base. And, that's something that doesn't happen with cigarettes. People try and pick and choose the people that they think should have higher taxes, and conversely, try and pick and choose people that they think that should have lower taxes. You know, we hear about it all the time about, specialized tax credits for companies to locate in certain areas and things like that. And those are all things that we are wary of because they distort the tax code and go away from that one flat rate on all Americans.
Let me ask you this: in terms of one flat rate on all Americans, there is a controversy recently on, and it's a little complex, but as I understand it, venture capitalists who tend to make money in the hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, when they make money on what they do, they get taxed as capital gains rather than ordinary income. So instead of these multi-billionaires paying the same flat rate that, say, a waitress earning minimum wage pays, they actually pay half her rate. They pay a capital gains rate. In the interest of the same tax rate for everyone, would you agree that those venture capitalists should at least pay the same rate as someone earning minimum wage?
Well, you're right that it's a very complex issue. First of all, those venture capitalists do pay on a portion of their income, they pay at income tax rates. They have a system of compensation called 2 and 20, and it's probably too long to get into here, but they pay income tax rates on the income level. On the income portion of what they earn. And the other part has always been defined as capital income. And we have, when you do your tax returns at the end of the year, some things are defined as capital income and some things are defined as regular income. It's always been defined as capital income, but it's only become an issue. People have only wanted to raise that rate when the capital gains tax got reduced to 15%. And
well,
so
I guess that's the heart of my question.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the heart of my question is, because you say you want a single rate for all, I'm really just testing you for consistency here. Do you agree then that capital gains and ordinary income should be taxed at the same rate, since you're arguing in effect that everyone should be taxed at the same rate, whether smokers or children or poor or rich? Do you think that ordinary income and capital gains should be taxed at the same rate?
Well, there's a fundamental problem, which is that capital gains taxes are fundamentally double taxation, because money that gets invested has already been taxed at income levels. But if in the spirit of compromise, let's put it this way, I'd be happy to tax everybody at the 15% rate rather than at the normal income rates that we've been talking about.
Andrew Moreland, thank you for coming here on The Inside Scoop. Coming up at the second half of the hour, we have Nyara Hawk, spokesperson for the Children's Defense Fund and the fierce defender of the state Children's Health Insurance Program. We'll be right back. If you want to call in, you can join in the discussion, as Sue has done. 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Here's one I've been wondering about for a long time, and now it looks like it's actually coming true, unfortunately. I'm talking about U.S. soldiers getting hooked on heroin, as they did in Vietnam. It didn't take a huge leap of logic to suspect this might be going on. After all, opium production in Afghanistan has gone sky high, accounting for 90% of the world's supply. So the availability is there, and I figured the desire to use it as the U.S. gets increasingly bogged down against the Taliban might be going up, too. So I wasn't surprised when I saw an article on Salon the other day by filmmaker Sean McKenna entitled, "It's Easy for Soldiers to Score Heroin in Afghanistan." McKenna gives this account. "I asked to buy heroin a dozen times during two trips a year apart in Afghanistan and never heard the word no. I also saw ample evidence that soldiers were trading sensitive military equipment like computer drives and bulletproof vests for drugs." McKenna said that some soldiers at Bagram Air Force Base claim heroin is everywhere, and it may be in Iraq, too. Nice. Heroin addiction, another hidden casualty of Bush's wars. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, "The plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden." Somebody's got to call up and say, "Good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?"
"Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?"
"Oh, just a moment. Let me check." "It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
"Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap."
"There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6 foot 7 inch Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes."
"Somebody's trying to..."
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing children's health care, most specifically the State Children's Health Insurance Program, a program that began in 1997, but will expire at the end of September this year, unless Congress and the President get their act together. Both the House and the Senate have voted for its expansion based largely on tobacco taxes. The President has threatened to veto the bill. Well, you heard from Andrew Moylan from the National Taxpayers Union. He's certainly opposed to the bill. Now I've invited Nayara Hawk, spokesperson for the Children's Defense Fund. Nayara, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Nayara, do we have you?
Yeah, right here. Can hear you loud.
Oh, there you are. Okay, good. I didn't hear you before. Nayara, let me raise some of the issues that Andrew raised with us and get your response to them. One of the things he says is that it doesn't really cover lower middle-income people, but actually some middle-income and even upper middle-income people. How do you respond to that?
I'm sorry, Mark, can you repeat that?
Sure. What the prior guest from the National Taxpayers Union said, it's a fallacy that this is something that's just for poor and lower middle income people. That actually this bill funds children in the middle class and maybe even a few in the upper middle class. How do you respond to that?
Has he read the legislation? That's why I said, come again? Because
I don't know.
I'm having a hard time understanding where that's coming from, because the legislation specifically says that it's for 300% folks on 300% of the poverty level or less. And that's family of four making $60,000 or less. Those are the only people
now,
that qualify.
Now, does it differ from state to state?
No. This would, right now, most states are at 200, some are at 400. This would bring every state up to a minimum of 300. New York State, for example, opted and made their own decision to cover up to 450%. But I know it sounds like a lot of money when we're talking in hundreds of percents. So just wanted to be clear that 300% of the poverty level as the cap is $60,000 for a family of four. That's
so. How many children are we covering?
$60,000 per person? I'm sorry?
How many children are we covering under the current program, which is set
to expire
in September?
Current program covers about 6 million children, but the beautiful thing about it is that there's about 4.5 million children who qualify, but for whatever bureaucratic reason can't actually enroll in the program. So there's.
What do you mean? Why couldn't children?
No, because, you know, a big part of the reauthorization push is to just make it an easier process where you don't have to go through two or three different sets of paperwork to enroll. Children are automatically enrolled. If they qualify for a free lunch at school, they qualify for SCHIP. If they're enrolled for 6 months, they shouldn't have to suddenly file paperwork again for 6 months. Enroll them for the whole year. It actually costs $2,000 to re-enroll a child. That's more than what the actual benefit package costs.
Well, it costs more to enroll a child than to give the child benefits?
To re-enroll a child than it does to actually, yeah, because the paperwork has to go through so many different hands for re-enrollment. It actually costs more. $2,000 it costs to re-enroll.
Well, isn't that an argument that there's too much government red tape and bureaucracy when they do health care?
And the new program that Congress just passed actually streamlines, makes it easier for children to be enrolled and for families to get health insurance. So if anything, it's the exact opposite of what your guy was saying before. This is not an expansion of government health care. This is not socialism. This is not big government. This is actually a really effective public-private partnership. This is exactly the kind of thing that America stands for.
Now, one of the things that he was saying is that you're helping a politically popular group, children, at the expense of a politically unpopular group, smokers, and that government shouldn't make the decision to favor one set of Americans over another set
of Americans.
Well,
you're talking to a smoker right here. So,
well, but you're willing to pay for it.
Honestly, I don't know any parent who smokes that wouldn't pay 20 cents more a pack to give their child health care insurance. That's the reality of it. 20 cents a pack for a cigarette. If I want a cigarette, I'm going to get a cigarette.
Well, actually, it's a little more than 20 cents a pack. To be fair, the House bill would raise it 60 cents. The Senate bill would raise it 45 cents.
I'd pay up to a dollar. Maybe okay. After a dollar I'd start negotiating, but I'd pay at least a dollar. A dollar a pack when you have... I'm not interested in nickel and diming the value of a healthy child. And that's what it comes down to.
One of the things that this bill would do, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is save money for emergency care for children. Is that fair?
Well, in the sense that if the child ends up going to the emergency room, it costs... Let me give you a perfect example. A child in Maryland had a tooth abscess, wasn't able to have it go to a dentist because he didn't have any dental coverage. The tooth abscessed, bacteria spread to the brain. He ends up in the emergency room in Maryland to get brain surgery. $250,000, and he dies. So You're going to tell me that $250,000 in a dead child is what our country prefers over spending $80 on a tooth extraction?
Well, let me invite someone on the air.
Yeah,
no, I hear you. It's a good point. Let me invite on the air a fellow co-host of mine on the Head On Radio Network. He's certainly a liberal and a progressive, but he's also a smoker, and he wants to ask you a couple questions. Bob Kincaid, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. Hi, Naira.
Hey, Bob. What do you smoke?
I'm a Camel Lights, Winston Lights kind of guy.
Oh, you like the cartoon. I'm a Marlboro girl.
Well, you know, when the end of the month comes, I've got one of those little rolling machines, so, you know, we do the Native American spirit.
And as Bob knows, I'm a virulent, intolerant non-smoker. But
oh, he's just awful, Neil. But I'm glad you mentioned it because it'd be kind of easy to be snarky and say I was going to quit, but now I have to double up.
Right.
My
Let's buy all the cigarettes now before we get taxed more.
Right, and you know my 13-year-old daughter just came home from a tonsillectomy this afternoon. I figured as soon as her throat heals, I'm going to get her a carton of Camels. But in all truth, I believe in this. I believe in this wholeheartedly. I don't just believe in health care for children. I believe in health care for every American. I think it's a human right.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it okay that it's on the back of smokers, Bob?
No, it's not. Because, you know, I'm not giving my daughter a carton of cigarettes.
I would agree with you. Let me tell you this. I would agree with you. But let's talk about how our country, but this is a bigger question about priorities. Look at how our country spends money right now. We could spend the amount it would cost to cover every child in the country right now, all 9 million uninsured children, to give them health care coverage for the next 10 years is literally, to the dollar, the equivalent of 3.5 months of defense spending. Not even private contractors. Defense spending.
Oh, I know.
In Iraq.
I know.
So, I mean, if this is... The program needs to be reauthorized by September 30th. Children are literally dying because of it.
Yes.
I completely agree with you that our funding priorities are messed up, but something's got to be done.
Well, I just wonder. I wonder what
money has to come from somewhere.
How did this happen in the halls of Congress? Because if you look, for instance, at consumption rates,
mm-hmm.
Smokers are an ever declining class of
mm-hmm.
taxpayers
mm-hmm.
by simple mortality and by the common sense of quitting smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But if you also look, if we're going to talk about, you know, the negative health effects, you know, that's where Mark went with this. Oh, you know, you smokers are poisoning the air, yada yada yada. Okay,
that's right.
Let's look at the increasing rates of juvenile diabetes, and let's look at the increasing rates of juvenile obesity, and let's put that on the doorstep where it belongs. Instead of an extra dollar on a pack of cigarettes, which by definition has to mathematically decline, what about an extra 15 cents a can on a Coca-Cola, Pepsi, you know, Mountain Dew, whatever?
Now, Bob, I'm just going to assume that as, you know, a nicotine-addled person, you're losing your objectivity here. But let's face it, smoking
doesn't... Well, no, more people drink pop than smoke
now,
cigarettes,
Now, wait a minute. 400,000 people a year die from smoking.
The first thing we like to ignore are the medical studies for the last 25 years that show how harmful smoking is, not for you, but also for the people around you, like... You know, we like to not talk about that. Congress is absolutely, driven by, you know, constituents. Seniors are very active lobbyists, so you're not going to find any money coming out of programs for seniors, which was another thought. You're not going to find any money coming out of defense spending for this. I mean, there's just certain programs that are just never going to be touched because of the nature of Congress and how politics works. Smokers are a declining, like you said, a declining voter base of every state. I mean, every major city now practically has managed to ban smoking in public or in restaurants. I mean, this is becoming more and more a private, personal choice. And
I agree with that.
If the government has an agenda to make people healthier, it's not necessarily wrong in making people pay more to be able to smoke.
Look, one-third out of every smoker dies from smoking. That's an amazing statistic. If you smoke, it is like taking a gun and playing Russian roulette only with two bullets and not one bullet. You have a 1 in 3 chance that smoking will kill you. There are all these things out there that can kill you. 1 out of 3 smokers will kill you. Now, I'm not going to defend obesity and the sugary sweet and all that kind of stuff, but it's nothing like 1 out of 3. It may kill 1 in 20,
and honestly,
something like that.
The 45 or 60 cents, I mean, the 45 or 60 cents that it might be increasing to go to children's health care, it does not make up for the entire cost of a pack of cigarettes. I mean, take a look at how much the cigarette companies are making.
Well,
if you want to talk about tobacco farmers and children, money needs to go to children. Money needs to go to tobacco farmers in the South. I completely agree with that. But there's a huge chunk in between that is.
Well, there is, and frankly,
anybody,
the production cost on a pack of cigarettes
but investors' pockets.
Yeah, the production cost on a pack of cigarettes is almost nil, and that's another one of the considerations.
I mean, there's a huge chunk of change that's going just to investors' pockets. I mean, so saying 45 cents of that should go towards children. Let's attack the people who are really profiting off of smoking.
Well,
I thank you both.
I'd like to see other products considered down the road, because if you look at what say, you know, the corporate evil of Coca-Cola, that's a no-brainer. So, you know, but thank you very much, Nair, and thank you, Mark, for allowing me a moment to get
a
word into the lepers.
No, I thanks for calling in, Bob. I'll tell you, you and I agree on 95% of progressive causes, but on the issue of smoking, you and I will always see that differently. I want to take a break and give other people a chance to call in. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back with Naira Hawk of the Children's Defense Fund. Right after this.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm getting so sick of hearing people try to minimalize what's going on. And China's up to it now, too. This idea that, you know, we're going to try and make moves, but not at the detriment to our economy. Hello! How many times do I have to say this? No planet, no economy. No planet, no business. No planet, no commerce. Drives me absolutely insane. And like I said last week, we have George W. Bush pressuring the G8 to soften their language while at the same time making public statements to tell the G8 to get with the program. Excuse me? What bloody planet are you on?
Join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, 10 to 11 a.m. weekdays, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Those people I know.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing children's health care, most specifically government health care for poor and middle-class children, with Naira Hawk, the spokesperson for the Children's Defense Fund. Naira, welcome back to the Inside Scoop. One of my callers, people write in, Naira, in the chat room and on the blog here, and one of them wants to know if alcohol users, if that was something that was considered for the bill.
Actually, not that I'm aware of. And I wasn't involved in the day-to-day details of the actual legislation process. I can tell you what it is now and what this legislation will become. But I don't. I know they considered a seniors program and they considered the tobacco tax.
Let me ask you about one other thing that it's in the House bill but not the Senate bill, and frankly, it's kind of confusing. So maybe you could explain it to us.
Mm-hmm.
In the House bill, they propose to reduce federal subsidies to insurance companies that pay for Medicare or supplementals to Medicare. Tell me exactly what that is.
What the Senate and the House version do is it streamlines federal funding to the states. And then the states then go and determine how specifically they're going to run their program. So it's a federal block grant with some specific guidelines, like, you know, dental and mental coverage have to be provided. You have to cover pregnant women. Also, you have to cover at least families up to the 300% poverty level. The rest is really up for the states to determine. So you will find regional and social variations to how the program's implemented.
One of the things that our guest, the National Taxpayer Union, was arguing, in effect, is that, hey, we can't expect the government to do everything. We don't expect the government to clothe children or to feed children. Why should we expect health care for children? How do you respond to that?
Why shouldn't we expect health care for children?
I'm just telling you what he said, all right?
It just comes down to rhetorical argument. You expect the police to come and help you without having to pay a bill. You expect the fire department to come and help you without paying for a bill. Why should you have to wait for your child to end up with a brain disease to go to the hospital and get health care when it actually saves the government and taxpayers money to do preventative care? It saves everyone money, everybody in the system, from the taxpayer to the government to the insurance company, saves everyone money to be involved in preventative care. So why shouldn't we do that? That's the question. I mean, you'll find very few people willing to say attack Medicare as something that needs to go away, but that's a huge entitlement program that covers seniors of all income levels. This is very much targeted to children of a certain economic level and giving the states all the flexibility that they need to implement their program.
Now, President Bush has threatened to veto the bill. It happens to be an extremely popular bill. Even the Senate voted more than two-thirds.
What people forget in this back-and-forth political talk is that a Republican Congress passed SCHIP in 1997, and now it's a Democratic Congress looking at renewing it. This is definitely a bipartisan program.
Do you think that you have enough to overturn
support.
A veto?
You know, if Congress has the will to cover all children, they'll find a way to overturn the veto. I think this is just I wouldn't want this to be my legacy as president, that I killed a successful children's health care program. So I'm not
Is it possible that he'll back down? I mean, George Bush is just an idle threat, and that he'll actually sign a bill
like
that.
He's a lame duck president with whose approval ratings are in the toilet. So I can't predict, but I can't predict what he'll do, but I can definitely tell you that Congress is going to figure out some way to reauthorize this legislation.
Well, what are the needs of children? I mean, in this regard, children obviously don't suffer from disease as often as adults do. So where does most of this money go?
Most of this money goes directly to coverage. And I wanted to draw the difference between coverage and access. We're not paying for specific procedures. It's giving children a package where they can go in and have minimal co-pays, but then they're able to access health care like everyone else.
So is this mostly for health care for emergency needs, or would it also include doctor's visits?
No, this is so you can have your six every few months dental visit. So if you need some kind of emotional, if you're a child with ADD, you'd be able to have access to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. This is health care coverage. This is so you can get all the preventative care that you need, so that you don't end up in the emergency room. I mean, all of this, psychiatric care, prenatal care, dental visits, all of this prevents the $250,000 cost of going and getting brain surgery in the hospital.
Now, a number of listeners on the website have compared our system to the Canadian system. with the S-CHIP program, would our children get as good care in the United States, at least the ones covered? Obviously, they're not
all
covered.
Yeah, children, I mean, our doctors are great. I mean, we certainly don't lack for good medical care. It's not like the Canadian system in that the doctors don't work for the government. This gives, again, it's a government-run program to give children coverage so that they can go see a private doctor just like anybody else.
Is it similar to Medicare in that way?
Yep. Except I don't want to say it's similar to Medicare. It's close to Medicare, closer to Medicare than it is the Canadian system. But how it differs from Medicare then is that it's a limited income, so it's not for everybody. It's for limited income. It's for people who can't afford or don't have access to private plans. It gives them a government plan instead, and it's not an entitlement where it's run just by the federal government. This is a state partnership. So the state, you know, it's a state run. And states work with their local private insurance companies to make it an effective program.
Let me ask you this. The original existing program, the one that expires September 30th, is that funded on tobacco as well, or is that funded by other
means? Yes, it was originally funded by tobacco tax.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So the original 39 cents excise tax is goes to S-CHIP already?
Goes to S-CHIP and Medicare, correct.
And Medicare already. So
right,
it's
sorry, Medicaid, which is the state-run.
Is there a smoker's lobby? I mean, I got someone like Bob who strongly agrees in progressive ideals, but wants to defend his right to smoke.
I wonder. I don't see a smoker's lobby per se. You definitely have like Altria and Philip Morris lobby.
Right.
But I think they're, again, their interests are not the people's interests. Their interests are protecting their profit margins. And if they pass, they will just turn around and pass it off to the consumer instead of paying for it themselves. So ideally, it shouldn't be passed off to the consumer. It should be something the companies have to pay for, given what they're doing to our national health care by promoting smoking. You know, it's still a personal choice, but you saw the results of what the tobacco lawsuits with the judgment being diminished by millions of dollars. So the tobacco industry itself has a huge lobby. Smokers, not sure about that.
Let me get back to the question of philosophy. It's interesting. Whenever I do these kinds of shows, it's almost like two different shows in the mm-hmm. sense that when I talk with you, we're talking about children, we're talking about health care, we're talking about money. But when I do have a guest like Andrew from the National Taxpayers Union, he's saying, in effect, look, it's my money. I could spend it however I want, and the government shouldn't take it from me. And it's just sort of a basic philosophical idea that we're not responsible for our neighbor, I guess.
Right, and then, but the people who complain about not being responsible for their community are the first people to complain when their schools start falling apart, when their bridge falls apart, when there aren't enough cops in the street. I mean, this is, you live as part of the community, and that's where your money goes towards. It's no one person can afford to run a hospital on their own. No one person can afford to run a school on their own. So this is the public. This is public spending. This is why we have representative government. So you put money towards a public good, and you elect people who you agree with how they're going to spend it. That is Congress's fundamental nature and purpose for existing, is to levy taxes and appropriate them out. So if you don't like how they're spending the money, then send somebody else to Congress. But that's the only way we will ever function as anything short of an anarchy.
Well, conservatives argue, and Andrew made this, a very similar argument, that basically you earn the money, and you should be able to do whatever you want with it. And if you don't want to help your neighbor, well, you should have the right. He didn't use these words, to be fair. But you should have the right to be selfish. And in essence, that the government, that poor children, if you will, their parents aren't working hard enough, aren't making enough money. They're kind of living off the.
Fine. If that person who wants to be selfish can figure out a way to live their life where they don't use public roads, they don't use public restrooms, they don't use a hospital, anything that receives public funds, great. I'm fine. Go off, live in the mountains, and live your life on your own. But then do not use anything that has been funded by taxpayer dollars. That's a very difficult life to live. I don't think any of us would enjoy that.
It is a difficult life to live. I think at the essence, people want to use things where they themselves are covered. I didn't ask Andrew whether
he
had children or not.
Be able to, people forget that every structure around us comes from money from somewhere, and that all the conveniences that we have, it's the best functioning government is one where you don't even notice it. So it's when you don't notice that you know, when you don't have potholes in the street. But you know, it's, if you want to drive and have potholes in the street, then you don't pay your taxes. I mean, that's,
Nayara,
that's,
tell me this, just to close. How can people support the Children's Defense Fund if they want to?
Go to our website. We have an ongoing petition of 25,000 people so far, and there's a way to send emails to your member of Congress. But Congress cares. They're listening. They just need the support to override a veto. So go to childrensdefense.org. That's children with an S and then defense.org, and sign up for our emails and to send a letter to your member of Congress. That's the best way to get this program moving forward.
There's also a link for my website at radioinsidescoop.com. Nayara Hawk, thank you so much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
That's it for The Inside Scoop. Bob Kincaid, who, even though he called in today, is going to do a rerun tonight. He's got to take care of his own child and her own health care. So you're going to hear some of the best of Bob Kincaid following me right now. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
Violence and political instability in the country. He will also go ahead with plans to hold elections. In southern Afghanistan, a senior British commander is